My boys.
Bring it home. What are you singing? I love it.
The blues, of course.
The blues.
I'm eating a grape, too.
Oh, nice. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith Podcast for May 2025. I'm your host, Jonathan Butrin, and I'm joined once again by the Chief of Sinners, Mr. Tim Nels. Hey, Tim.
I think that's the Apostle Paul, but all right.
Hey, Paul said, this is true, all you Bible nerds out there. Paul was like, yo, this is a great saying that we should be saying all the time. Christ came in the world to save sinners, of whom I'm the worst.
Yeah.
That's what he said. I think there's some truth to that, right? Like, what if the church really embodied that? What if the church was like, hey, we're not pointing fingers anywhere else. We are the chief sinners of the world. I think there'd be a very different vibe.
What if we treated it like, you know, at my workplace, they have this thing to try to make you healthy by you get on a team and you do a bunch of steps.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
What if we had rankings of who the most sinful people are and they just posted them?
In the office?
No, just like not in the office, like a church.
Oh, church.
And then
you could
move up in the rankings.
Oh.
Or down.
Who would be measuring this sin chart? That's the thing.
No, corporate.
Corporate?
I mean, of course, self-reported, but yes, corporate would compile it and create a spreadsheet that obviously that would rank each sin.
You know what's a sin often employed at the office? Gossip. Everyone loves to gossip about other people at the office. It's a very tricky thing to navigate, you know, especially if you're in a supervisor role because your employees always want to be like, that person in their emails. And you're just like, well, yeah, it's tough.
I got in trouble. I was not very nice to another employee. It's email that got me in trouble that you bring.
Really?
I don't like long emails. I like to ramble on like I'm doing now, but I don't like a long email.
Yeah.
Because that's work. And so generally I try not to send long emails, but when somebody does a very long email with information I know is not pertinent to me or anyone else, it makes it really hard for me. So I was a jerk and I had to apologize because I was like I complained about these long emails and I'm like, you know what? These were thorough, good emails.
Yep.
So I felt bad. So we got to be loving to our neighbors.
I think that's
not
right.
Be gossipy.
And I tend to send longer emails. I want to pack all the information. Everything I do is too long. All my comments on social media, too long. I'm always like, could have cut out those two paragraphs.
I'm going to stop you right here, John.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm going no, on I'm too
just,
long already.
No, you're not. I'm just teasing you. So do you really send long emails?
I do. I try. I was really bad when I first started at the corporate office environment. I have gotten a lot better over the years, but I still have this idea in my head where I want to make sure I'm like, I have this, I think it's a gift, but I can hear people's arguments to what I'm saying in real time as I'm writing. So I try to like, oh, they're probably going to think this though. And then I try to pack in counter arguments to the arguments, if that makes any sense. So yeah. It all ends up being too long. Anyway, hey, it's Sinner's Day on the pod, in case you didn't know. Today is all about sinners. Tim and I are sinners, and we're talking about the movie Sinners, and it's just a beautiful thing. So here we go. Tim, hey, how's May treating you so far? It's been a little bit since we talked. You doing good?
It's rainy. It's beautiful. It's Midwest. We give the weather report. It's been rainy, pretty rainy. I got a tick on me the other day outside. Didn't bite me, thank goodness.
You don't want that Lyme disease.
Well, I know you hate ticks. You hate ticks.
Yeah.
And you, totally. They're like, it would make you avoid all a state that might have ticks.
Well, you just hear these stories of people who are just like down for the count for 3 months because they got bit by a tick. I don't want that. No, thank you.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So there have been some ticks. Okay, so my May has been good though. I'm going to take a little bit of a week off and go fishing.
Oh, nice.
And I really
this
need
week?
To do that.
Next week?
This coming week.
Yep,
yeah.
This coming week. That's beautiful. I'm so happy for you. Post some pics. You always do.
I'll try. I'll do what I can. I got to catch some good fish.
Awesome. I can't wait to come out there. I'm coming out there, by the way, everyone, in June for a few days to hang out with good old Timmy, and we're going to maybe get out on the water and do all kinds of stuff. It's going to be great.
We've got to go to Armor Screenland Movie Theater.
Oh, yeah. We totally got to go because we've talked about it on the pod, and we need to. Because what I would love to podcast when I'm with you so we could just bang it out of the way, and then we can talk about like a movie experience. It'll be really good. You could save Mission Impossible for me. I bet it's playing there, and then we could go together and then podcast on it. I will already have seen it at that point, but I'm sure it'll be great for a second viewing.
This Mission Impossible thing,
don't. Hey. Don't start with me. You know you have to. Dan Baker, our mutual friend, friend of the pod, he was like, Tim was so mad. I was like, I think he really was.
About what? What was I mad about?
He was growling, Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah, I growled. Did you hear that?
You growled. Yeah. There was a distinct growl. That's all we're saying.
When someone asks you to watch like the 15th installment of something and then talks about it like it might win an Academy Award.
It might.
You may growl. But I can, what I can see here is that John loves a blockbuster, and he's actually gotten me, he's gotten me more open to the blockbuster, which I really appreciate. So I got to tell you, man, thank you for forcing me to see movies I don't want to see.
Of course.
I really mean that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, Tim, it's time for everyone's favorite segment. What have we been watching? Tim, anything new and interesting that you have been consuming in the world of the arts?
Yes. Okay, so I've been watching The Last of Us, which is currently releasing new episodes.
So good. So you watched season one, you've already caught up, and you're doing season two week to week like I am. Are you really?
Yes.
Are we watching a show in real time together? Oh my gosh, this is a first. I love it.
I don't know if it's real time. I'll watch it with Perry, and whenever he's available, I get to watch it. So I save the episode.
Oh, okay. So you might be a little behind, but yeah, that's okay.
No, I'm good. I'm all up to speed right now until Sunday. Then I'll be, who knows? But yeah, I may watch it with him on Sunday. I don't know.
And you get to watch it with your kid. That's a joy. Yeah.
Yeah, he loves it. And he's like, Dad, there's a, he always tells me, Dad, there's an ending that is going to really get you. And I'm just like, shh, quiet.
Yeah, quiet. Yeah, no spoilers, but how about that episode too? Woof.
Wow.
Wow. It was an event. Like, I was stunned at the end of that. My mouth was open because I haven't played the games. I don't know what's happening. And I was successfully non-spoiled for what went down. It's crazy.
This is where I feel like the gamers have an edge on us.
Mm-hmm. I hear they're great games. I would love, I really like want to be into games. I wish I had the time. I wish I had the systems. I wish I had all of it. I want to be one of those people who are just immersed in a good video game, but I can't do it. It's too time consuming. But anyway, I hear they're great games, and I'm so glad you're watching The Last of Us. This is great. I was going to mention The Last of Us in my segment. I can skip right over it because we've already talked about it. It's so beautiful.
So here's the thing. I've been doing that, and then I've been digging deep because I have coworkers I'm trying to water cooler talk with, and they have just started, well, they have already watched the show Alone, which is like 10-year-old show.
Alone?
Yes, it's reality-ish television where they drop like 10 people on an island, on Vancouver Island, but they're not together. And they have to survive as long as they can alone.
This is kind of the Naked and Afraid or that whole segment where it's like, we're going to drop you on an island. You're going to figure out, or Survivor. We've been watching Survivor. But yeah, I've heard Alone is really good. Tom Hanks highly recommended Alone. I remember some random clip I saw of his. He was like, we've been binging Alone all week, and so I hear it's good.
And if you can't trust Tom Hanks, then you can't trust America or anything else. Maybe you can't. But anyway, Tom Hanks is, yeah, like I said, he's like you, John, the voice of moral reason, and he won't lead us astray. It's a good show, and what I would say about the first season, and this is not a spoiler, I'm afraid of bears, John, and basically they have more bears and cougars on this island, like cougars, like full-on wildcats.
Oh my gosh.
It has more bears and cougars on this island than, like, more cougars for sure than anywhere density wise in the world.
Wow.
And they just drop these dudes and gals
on
this island.
And they're real animals around them. Like, there's no safety net, no protections.
No, it's just them. And if they call for help, it could be like 4 hours. So you could get like mauled by a bear and bleed out.
Dang. So there is real danger embedded in this thing. This is not kid's gloves. I love it.
No, it's not.
Alone. Where are you watching this? What streaming platform is this on?
I've been watching it on Hulu.
Okay.
But there is a new, there's one season of Alone Frozen, I think is what it's called, on Max, which is like a Arctic one.
There you go. The Last of Us and Alone. I love it, Tim. I've been meaning to watch that show ever since Tom Hanks did mention it. Tom Hanks is the voice of reason. Tom Hanks is when we all took COVID seriously. We'll never forget that moment. When Tom Hanks got it, we knew we were in serious trouble.
It was toilet paper for me. When there was no toilet paper left, I was like, what is happening? Speaking of, you know, The Last of Us, where did they get their toilet paper on The Last of Us is a real good question.
That's a great question.
There's nobody making toilet paper in this situation.
Yeah, they all seem a little too clean and happy. I'm like, there's like nothing available, right? You guys are like dancing. I don't know. I guess they figured it out.
Well, yeah, they figured it out. It's been a while since the event. Watch this show, everyone. Watch the first season if you haven't started. We will cease to spoil.
So I want to highlight two anti-authoritarian shows that are currently streaming. I love it because it feels very apropos for our current environment, and good art is coming out at the right time. So first of all, we have Andor Season 2. This is a Star Wars spinoff, which many ears will suddenly go, ugh, not for me. I get it. You know me. I'm famously over Marvel and all of these endless franchise things. High five. Tim's high-fiving me. I love it.
I'm Zoom high-fiving, which you can actually do on Zoom, but I'm doing it like pretending to do it.
There's only one franchise left that matters, Mission Impossible. Anyway, no. So Andor is great, legitimately great. It's the best Star Wars spinoff of any of them. It was even better than The Mandalorian. I stand by it. There is something about this show that captures the Star Wars of your youth. If you're of our age and you were at a sleepover and you saw Star Wars for the first freaking time, there is something that felt so real, and the production design felt like you were there. This show recaptures that, and it really like builds on the premise of what if we took the Star Wars universe into 10, 12, 13 episodes and just felt like you were like living this world where you're a stormtrooper and you come and have breakfast and there's that weird green juice that you drink because you're in the Star Wars universe. It's like the detail. And anyway, it's also about the rebels fighting against the Empire. And so Rogue One was this movie that came out, I don't know, 8 years ago.
Great movie.
Yeah. It was a really good Star Wars movie. The Andor is a prequel to that. So it's basically all of the characters in that movie were going to make two seasons. It's just two seasons and then they're done. Two seasons leading up to that movie. You already know what happens to them. Oh. We're going to show you how they got there. That's the show.
Oh, I love that.
And they're fighting the Empire. You know, Star Wars is very anti-authoritarian. Like, from the beginning, we just watched A New Hope as a family. It's the rebels fighting the Empire. And the Empire is very political. And they've got, like, they're in charge of, like, you know, it all. So I don't know.
But also in Star Wars, don't the rebels turn into their own empire, kind of?
Oh, but that's their own tendency, right? You overthrow one empire, and then if you're not careful, you become the empire. I think that's a very important thing to remember.
Yes. That's philosophical. I like it. So I haven't seen Andor yet, but I've heard good things about it, not just from you today, but I've heard good things. So I should watch this. Is there a second season that came out?
So we are on season two. And season one was a couple years ago. This is season two, and that's it. They'll wrap it up. It'll be done, and then you just basically rewatch the movie, and you have completed the Andor journey. Rewatch Rogue One, I mean. So yeah, pretty cool. Great show.
I like this. So there's no Jar Jar Binks, is there?
No.
Are there Gungans at all?
There is nothing. Everything that is silly and stupid about the Star Wars universe is not present in this show, which is why it's good.
Do you think I'm racist because I don't like Gungans?
No.
No?
The whole world is against Jar Jar Binks. It's not racist.
I mean, is it kind of like I don't like ducks or something, and that's okay?
You are racist.
Yeah, see, but I kind of feel like they are.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah. So I don't like, I just, like any good fan, I don't like Jar Jar.
I talk about this all the time. I'll never forget the hype leading up to The Phantom Menace, the sold-out theater, sitting in the front row. I was in the front row with my friend.
Preach.
And it's like, at what point did we all realize this movie sucks?
The Phantom Menace?
The Phantom Menace with Jar Jar Binks. Anyway.
Darth Maul. Darth Maul
Darth
is good.
Maul. He's all right. Doesn't
he have his own series coming out of cartoons or something?
Maybe. I don't know. The dialogue in that movie is so bad. It's just so
It's bad. Really, really, really bad. Yes. And the kid, bless that kid. He's just not so great.
Anyway, nightmares. Okay, so that's Andor. Then another second anti-authoritarian show, if you're like me and you want this content right now, Handmaid's Tale. This is a darker show. We're on the final season. I think it's season six. I have watched all the way to this point. This is about a Christian theocracy that has overtaken America, where these men are leading, or we're returning back to biblical times where the men are the leaders and the women are basically there for breeding and they know their place. And it's basically, we're enacting all the principles of the Bible and forcing it on everybody. That's The Handmaid's Tale. And it has been been a wonderful journey. Honestly, the quality of this show all through the seasons, there has not been any downtime where you're just like, this show is meandering. It's just, it's good. It's intense. It's wonderful. Great performances and very, very relevant to our times. I'm watching the final season.
So, John, is the environment of The Handmaid's Tale, the fictional environment, is it worse than the current Trump first 100 days?
Well, of course it is, because they have really taken everything that's happening now to its logical conclusion. The problem is that it feels too eerily familiar. It feels like if we let this regime do whatever they want to do, we'd get to a very similar place as to this show.
Yeah, but they don't base anything on Christian values in the White House currently.
Well, it's all this faux Christianity, which is what The Handmaid's Tale is, right? It's not real Christianity. It's not the way of Jesus. It's not, you know, the way of Jesus is not kidnapping women and forcing them to have your babies. But
wait a minute. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. That's the show, right? That's what a handmaid is in the show, yeah.
Oh, man, that's different than what I... Okay, I'm going to have to revise my theology.
But it's biblical, right? Go back to Old Testament and you've got... Yeah, remember when, who was it that had their handmaid, like Sarah couldn't have kids, and so we'll have the hand...
Hagar. Yeah, but that was...
I know, but this is what I'm saying. This is what happens when you have fake Christianity. You pull random Bible stories and Bible verses and you say, this is the Bible, and we're not going to question it, and we're not going to use Jesus to understand what this actually meant. No, we're going to enact this for real.
So I'm hoping they make a show based on Elijah then.
Right. They always leave out those parts.
Yeah. Well, I hope that they make a show where he calls bears out of the woods.
To eat the kids.
To murder young people who are being disrespectful.
Because they mocked his bald spot.
Yes. They called him an old baldy. And I hope that we have a movie about that.
That'd be great.
What would I call that? I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. There's a lot of bear movies. I mean, I think it could be a biblical bear movie. Yeah. I mean, that could be a whole movie right there.
Yeah. He just is like called the bears and ate the kids. I mean, it's pretty harsh.
It's good stuff. I'm going to tell that story to some kids in the hospital.
So there you go. These are our TV recommendations. We have The Last of Us Season 2. We have Alone. We have The Handmaid's Tale. And we have Andor. Those are some great picks, guys. You can't go wrong.
That's right.
Do it. All right. Tim, we were going to stay home and watch Mickey 17. That was the original plan. But then... I kept hearing rumblings about a movie, Sinners. So many different places. I was hearing it from friends. And then, this is the weird thing, celebrities were coming out with these pictures and videos of them enjoying this movie. I don't know where this came about, but you had Tom Cruise, who like literally went to see a movie in some random town. He had his movie stub, and he had a picture with a big thumbs up next to the poster. I could just see Tom Cruise just, you know, going right up to the counter and being like, one for Sinners, please.
Wow. It was a local theater? You just went to it?
I think it was, yeah. And then Kevin Bacon and his wife, like, they came out of the theater after watching it and were like, you guys got to see this movie. Great acting, great music. And so I don't know where the celebrity tie-ins came in. But anyway, I was listening. I was randomly seeing that. Then my friends were talking about it. Then I go on Rotten Tomatoes and this thing's at like a 98%. And I'm like, all right, hold up. I think we need to switch gears and we need to see this movie. And we did. And you know, remember we talked about last time about Minecraft and how we were excited that the kids were like going to the theater again?
Yes.
That's what's happening for this movie, but for adults. Like IMAXs are being sold out. This movie it's in its third weekend. It has not hardly dropped at all, like box office wise. It's made over $200 million worldwide. Like people are seeing this movie and then telling their friends and then going and seeing it again. This is a moment. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I only remember seeing a cut. Like, I didn't see a ton of previews for this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree. Yeah, our theater on a Wednesday night, I saw it last night. Our theater on a Wednesday night was still pretty full. And it was amazing. The main theater. It was like the big rumbly one. Not the IMAX, but the big rumbly.
Oh, you actually had the rumbly seats? You went and saw it there? Oh, okay.
Which was kind of fun.
Yeah.
That's the right movie for that.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that that's a cool experience. I want to do it. Yeah, they have one near us too. So, yeah, well, let's talk about it. How did your theater experience go? So you had rumbly seats. Now, explain exactly how this works for those not familiar.
So basically, like, it must be, like, linked into the sound. Like, they have a track for the seats, basically.
Right.
And so at certain, like, seats will rumble and move and vibrate and stuff, like, at certain parts. And I think it's keyed into the sound, but somebody's designing the rumble for these theaters. So we, it just happened to be the one that we got at the time I needed to see the movie. So yeah, it's, so it's like a recliner that rumbles.
Does it feel natural, or does it feel like, why is it going now? Like, it feels very natural to the movie?
Natural.
Okay.
Because it goes with the soundtrack. So something like an explosion happens, you get a rumble. It's kind of like how you get used to a video game controller that does that.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, of course.
It makes sense. Right.
But it's more natural than a video game controller, I would say, because it's like way more scripted. It's not like a response to something. It's part of the movie. So this is like another level, layer of movies, which is like the, what do you call that, tactile or
4D? It's sort of like bringing it, you know, that one other layer.
Yeah.
They tried smell-o-vision back in the 70s, but that was a disaster.
Oh, man, gross. <I know. laughs> There's plenty of smells in those theaters already.
We've already talked about the smells.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So one nice thing about these fancy seats is they are pleather, I think. And it keeps the funk off them.
What did we call it last time? It was like the butt funk.
I don't know. You called it something.
You called it something. You called it like detritus.
Detritus.
Detritus. Anyway, we don't need to go down that road again. So, yes. Great. So it was fun. And you had the seats and you had a semi-packed theater, which is great for this movie.
I went with my son.
You went with Perry. That's what I was hoping for. Okay.
Yeah. He actually, here's what happened. You gave us two options. I can't remember the second option. One was easier to watch, but this one, my son goes, Dad, have you heard about this movie? And I was like, well, we're going to podcast it. He's like, no way. And he's like, you really should. And I'm like, okay, do you want to go to it? Yeah. So he was like pumped on it. He thought it was cool. And how did he find out? Word of mouth from his buddies.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Because I did present you with two options and you said, my kid has been talking about this movie. So there you go. There's that word of mouth. So We got to get to Perry's. I want to, at the end, when we do our final thoughts, I want to hear Perry's thoughts on the movie, but don't spoil it.
Perry had a thought on concessions this time because he's beginning to have his own money. He's beginning to, you know, he drives cars and stuff. So he goes and I said, get what you want. I said, don't spend too much money because it's movie theater prices. He's like, wow, yeah, these prices are so expensive. So he gets like a bag of Kit Kats and it's like $6.50.
Of course.
And he's like, Dad, did you see how much that was? And at that moment, I was like, oh, thank goodness.
It's so nice as a parent, right? Exactly.
Uh-huh. He's like, $6.50. Oh, my gosh. And I was like, I raised this man right. He's going to be cheap like me.
I love
this is
it.
Great.
I love yeah. it. I know my youngest, I always like to go, I just paid $60 for gas. His eyes, he can't even believe it. Like, how would something cost that much money?
That just evaporates into the ozone layer or destroys it. I know. What the heck?
So it's nice when they start to learn the value of money and how much we've been spending on them all these years.
They had no idea. They don't think about it. They just think that it just, all right, we're going into dad rants. We need to stick on the film.
No, not another dad rant. Night moves. Okay, so I decided to make a whole day out of this. All right, so I went and saw this movie with, we've already mentioned him, but we should mention him again, Dan Baker. We just decided, I don't know, I was talking with him about something else, politics probably or whatever. We always have these little sidebars. And then I was like, oh, but on a positive note, because that's usually, you have to turn it around at the end of that conversation. I really want to see Sinners. And he's like, I want to see it too. So we arranged a little date where we went and saw we had breakfast together in the morning, and then we went to the earliest showing available, 10:45 of Sinners. Really delightful way to start your day, honestly. And Dan always knows the great breakfast joints. This guy is a foodie. He understands the mission. And we went to this amazing cafe called like Molly's Cafe, I believe it was. And it was so good. Tim, it was so good.
Where was it?
I don't know. That's everyone asked me that because I, of course, when I go there, I talk to everyone about how great it was. And they're like, where is it? And I'm like, I have no idea because Dan was driving and I don't pay attention to those things. And I'm geographically challenged. I'm sorry. I just am. I have no idea where I am at any given point. But anyway, great. Great food. I got this bagel sandwich with egg and it's just amazing. So anyway, when we saw this movie on the super screen, it was called, at the Majestic. Now, I don't think the screen was that super. Didn't seem that big to me. But the sound was wonderful, and it had the DLX sound and everything. So that was the right choice.
Can you give us an example of the sound?
You watch. Nice.
Okay, go ahead.
No, it wasn't. It was all around you, and it was very like that. It was just right there, like the scene.
Did you feel like a hummingbird was flapping right next to your ears?
Yes. Right next to my ear. Beautiful way to say it. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was wonderful. So we saw this movie. And then that same day, I came home after the movie. I was so pumped up. I love seeing good art. I was telling everyone, like, so good. And then I took I rested for about an hour. And then I went to a Brewers game with my kid that night. What a day. Like, that's just one of those days.
Man.
That's one of those days that you want a Groundhog Day scenario where I want every day. I just want to keep waking up every day and just doing this.
Breakfast, good film.
Yep. And a game.
Good baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Did they lose?
Oh, we lost. Oh, we lost. Yeah, yeah. The Cubbies. I don't want to talk about it.
Let's not talk about it.
So that was my experience. And here we go. Let's talk about the plot of this movie because people out there
I'm
might
not going
like,
to summarize the plot.
Yes, you are. You're going to summarize it. It's your turn. I did it last time. Doggone it, Tim.
I can try. Okay, I'm going to try. John will.
I'll fill in the details.
All right. Here is the plot. They are twin brothers, Smoke and Stack. Is that correct?
The Smokestack twins. That's correct.
There you go. They have left for Chicago. They are working with possibly Al Capone, but organized crime. And they steal a bunch of money from gangsters. And they come back down to Mississippi, which is their home area in the Delta, in the small area that is basically Jim Crow South, sharecropping community where there's a lot of black folks and only a few white folks who have all the power.
Who are racist Klans members, yes.
Right. And so they have all this money. They have a bunch of booze. They have all these things. And they decided that, in their words, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. So we know the devil down here in Mississippi. So we will try to work our game here. So they want to start a juke joint, which is a place where you dance, drink, have a great time on your day off. And so they're going to start this juke joint Saturday night. They buy, basically it's a lumber mill, I think, that was from a guy who we learn later is the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan or something like that, or a leader of it. And they buy it from this guy in a very awkward interaction. They pay cash. And then the movie goes about them making preparations in the community for this incredible event that they're going to hold, and they're going to try to make money on it.
And they're getting the help from their friends. They're getting the guy who plays guitar. They're getting someone to play the piano.
It's blues, heavy blues, because we're in the Delta. Now, one of the main characters is, I forgot his name.
Sammy.
So Sammy is a blues man. He has a dobro guitar, which is like has that silver resonating thing on it. He has a dobro guitar, and he can play this blues that it will kind of has a magical effect on people because he's so good, and he can like really summon up motion, and even people claim good and evil spirits,
mm-hmm.
good and evil. And so he is highly sought after. So they get this group together, and they throw this thing.
That feels like the whole movie because literally that's like the first hour-ish of this movie is that before you get to any of the actual
but it's interesting
stuff that breaks
nothing
up.
Wrong with it.
It's interesting. It's great. It works. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then what?
And then. Okay. And then there is a group of Native American folks who are hunting vampires and they're hunting a vampire named Remick, I believe.
Something like that.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Remick is running from these guys who are going to try to kill him during the day. It's about twilight. He runs into the house of a Klan member and his wife, and he transforms them into vampires because he's a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And then they somehow have musical abilities at this point, and they decide after Sammy plays at the juke joint, they're like being summoned. They can feel the power of the music. And they're being summoned because they're evil. They want to get in the juke joint.
Yes. And we'll leave it there. We don't want to go any further. But yes, they want to get in. They want to do their thing. And then we'll leave it there. Wonderful.
Hey, what do vampires do?
Vampires want to eat your blood and turn you into a vampire.
The vampire I'm most familiar with, he likes to count.
Right. Count Dracula. I saw...
That's his name, actually.
There's a great meme online, and it shows Michael B. Jordan was on Sesame Street once, and so it's Michael B. Jordan with Count Dracula next to him, and it says Sinners 2025.
No way.
Yeah.
So I'm on the right track here. Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, so the count can count quite well, but these are not the type of vampire.
Right. Great sum up, Tim. That's perfect. Wonderful. So,
see how long it was, though?
Yeah, I know. I know. But you nailed it. I love it.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
So let's talk about some acting. First off, we got Michael B. Jordan. Now, I will say that I wasn't like the biggest fan of him up until this point. He was never bad. I've seen him in a bunch of stuff and he was always like good, but like I've never had this moment with him where I'm like, whoa, that guy, until this movie. This is, I think, a career defining performance for him in the sense that this is going to open up a ton of new doors and like possibly make him a legit movie star. I loved it. What do you think of him in this movie, Tim?
I think of him as a movie star. I think he's quite versatile in this because one of the things that he did really well, and you'll see when people try to play twins, they seem like the same person. Like their dialogue seems similar. Smoke and Stack are like very different people.
I love that. I know.
Like he's able to like make them very different. They're interested in different things.
Different personalities.
Yeah, they're very differentiated from each other. So like they even have like a different style. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very cool.
You don't really have a problem like keeping track of who's who. Like sometimes that is a problem in twin movies. Yeah.
Well, also, yeah, and they don't, it doesn't sound like somebody just talking into themselves. The twins' dialogue seems like there are actually two people there, which is great.
And how cool that we've like come to the place where we can just do this in movies and TV shows. We can have one actor be twins and it is seamless. Like they're literally handing each other cigarettes. I don't even know how they do it, but we have come to the place where you need one actor to be twins for 2.5 hours. We got you. No problem. It'll be perfect. That's amazing technology. I don't know. We figured it out.
So do you think he got paid for both roles?
Ooh. Ah, good contract negotiation. It's like, I'm actually playing two roles.
Because you can't use your likeness, right? Without getting for something without compensation from the Screen Actors Guild. That's how it works, right?
Well, you know, famously, Back to the Future 2, they stole Chris. What's his name? What's the guy's name who goes around, who is like really weird? Crispin Glover. Crispin Glover, who plays...
Oh, he's so weird. He's so weird.
Crispin Glover, who plays the dad when Marty goes back in time. Anyway, in Back to the Future 2, he didn't want to do the movie, and they stole his likeness, and they put him in the movie anyway. And so I believe there was a huge lawsuit, and that you are correct that you cannot do that anymore.
I think you're right. So why the heck, if you're Crispin
Glover?
What a strange name. Sorry if your name's Crispin out there, but, you know.
Yeah.
That's like a chip's name. Or like apples, Crispin.
Totally.
But like, why would you not do Back to the Future 2?
Didn't like the script.
But you're like too good for this? Like, what are you waiting for? Like, what offers are going to make it so you don't do Back to the Future 2?
I think he had more offers back then. But yeah, he was just standing on principle. Didn't like the script. Didn't like the story. Didn't want to be in it. But they were like, we're putting you in anyway. Crispin Glover, man. Super weird guy. Goes around with his, like, he has the slideshow. And he has these movies that he's directed, which are super weird and graphic. And just like, what? And you can only see them when he comes to your town and plays them. And I kind of want to go just to like, you know, have the experience, but what a weird guy. Anyway, keep doing your thing, Crispin Glover.
What a weird dude. But it is like, it does attract me. Like, I'm like,
Right.
I kind of want to go to your sideshow.
You should go. You should go on his website. It's CrispinHellionGlover.com. And it will tell you when he's coming to your town. Crazy.
Oh, man, this sounds great.
Okay, let's move on to Michael Caton, who plays Sammy. Now, Ryan Coogler, who wrote and directed this movie, needed a musician for this part because, as you mentioned in the plot summary, he's a musician. He's a master of the blues. He really is. He's like a young prodigy. And so he needed like someone who could actually sing and play guitar. So he finds this person who, in this audition, you know, million, thousands of audition tapes, whatever, finds this diamond in the rough, never been in a movie before. This kid, Michael Caton, who plays Sammy. I know. And he's great, right? That's crazy.
His name's Michael Keaton?
Michael Caton, C-A-T-O-N.
Oh.
Kate, I know.
I was like, Michael Keaton. Strange. So he's never been in a movie before. He was great.
So great.
This guy was great. Yeah.
Not a false note in him. I mean, you just don't see that too often. And he played the guitar and sang for real. What a great performance. Loved it.
Yeah. He was fantastic. And he's kind of based. We can get into this a little bit. His character is kind of based on, like, what, Robert Johnson?
Robert Johnson.
Who's a blues...
He's a blues
guy. He's the guy that sold his... Yeah, this is a famous deal. He's, like, one of the famous bluesmen. Lead Billy, Robert Johnson. So, historically, or, well, I don't know if it's historical, but traditionally, people say he sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads. So, he went from being an okay guitar player... Like, he just kind of could play some chords and stuff. And within a few months, he was the best guitar player anybody had ever seen. And they say he sold his soul to the devil to get those guitar playing chops.
I didn't know this story. That's really cool.
Yeah. And influenced all kinds of rockers, too, like Rolling Stones. I mean, a lot of people, Dylan, everybody. Yeah. People thought his stuff was good. And it was. So you can look up, go hit your iTunes and get a little Lead Belly.
Ronnie Johnson. That's the name.
Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Lead Belly's good too.
I actually like his character, Sammy, because he is at a crossroads. That's like what this character is. He's got sort of this innocence calling him from his dad, who's a preacher, right? His dad's just like, hey, just play your guitar for the church. Stay here. But he is drawn to the club. He is drawn to the nighttime scene, you know? And he really believes that that's where he should be and wants to be. And so he is at that crossroads. And I feel like we could all relate. Those of us who grew up in the church can kind of relate to that, you know? You kind of grow up very sheltered, very like, we're in our little bubble here. But there's this like call that maybe there's something else out there. I don't know.
Yeah. What's interesting is the guitar is in the church, the dobro guitar.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
From
the 30s. And he takes the guitar. His big thing is he got all his work done and he asked dad to take the guitar and he takes the guitar and he goes from being like a church instrument and now he's going to use it for the juke joint.
Yeah.
So it's like he made this choice to go to evil.
Yeah, I love it. The guitar from the church.
He's at the juke joint. He's dipping his toes in the evil.
Yes.
You know, just saying, hey, what's the water like here? And he's hanging out with his cousins, Smoke and Stack, right?
Yeah. They're cousins, right?
They're a little sketchy. They're not bad guys, but they are bad guys.
They are.
They do illegal, weird stuff. They seem
They'll kill people.
Cool dudes. They'll kill you. They'll shoot you in the street if you try to rip off their liquor, things like that. They're trying to make a living. They're kind of hustlers more than bad guys, I guess. They're trying to make a living and kind of get by in this world, but they're not afraid to, you know, embrace a little bit of evil.
That's right. Haley Steinfeld is the last person I want to get in depth here. We saw her first in speaking of kind of first time acting, she was in this movie called True Grit by the Coen brothers with Jeff Bridges. It's a Western, and she was nominated for an Oscar right out of the gate. First film performance. She played a girl in that.
That's who that is?
Yes.
I didn't realize that. She's great.
She's grown up. She's still rocking it. Now, look, she has been in a ton of movies. A lot of franchise movies, Transformers, Charlie's Angels, Pitch Perfect. So she's made some commercial choices, probably got paid a lot of money for that. Can't really fault her, but she has the chops and she knows when to bring it. I remember her from a movie with Woody Harrelson from like 8 years ago called The Edge of 17. And it was really good. It's in my top 10 for that year. And so look, she has had some great performances over the years right from the gate. And then here she is. And I thought she was great in this.
And she's playing like a romantic interest.
She is. And very like strong, fierce, independent woman, you know, who's not going to be disrespected by these Smoke and Stack boys.
And so her character is a black woman who can pass as a white woman.
Right.
And so much so that she marries a wealthy white guy, but she's really in love with Stack, right?
It's one of them. I couldn't remember.
But Stack realizes that if she's seen with him, that people will think he is with a white woman and they will terrorize her and also terrorize him. So he has to protect her. So he's like, has to not live his life with her, which is very tragic.
Like he loves her too, but he is sacrificing that because he knows that that could be dangerous for her. Yeah. Yeah. Tragedy.
Yeah.
So there you go. I thought she was great. Those are the three characters that really stand out. Are there any other characters that you want to briefly touch on that stood out to you Any other characters in this? I did like the lead vampire guy. Jack O'Connell is the actor who plays him. He was great.
So did Perry. Perry thought that guy was awesome. Yeah. And he's like, I even like their song. I'm like, oh, weird.
They have a creepy vampire song. I like it.
Yeah. They're having like the vampire jams. It looks pretty fun too. You know?
Yeah.
But they have a big old jam session. But yeah, they're creepy. They're eerie. They play Irish folk music. Oh gosh, they're like the creepiest white people I've seen in a film since what's the
Get Out?
Yeah, since Get Out.
Yeah, I knew you were going there.
Yeah. Like they're so creepy. Oh my gosh.
Totally.
Oh, they're just creepy, man.
They get under your skin. I know.
Yeah, they're eerie. I don't even know, like, I don't like to think about them even.
You can join them forever, Tim, and sing beautiful Irish folk songs for the rest of your days.
Yeah, I don't know. yeah, very creepy.
All right, let's talk about the music. So last time we got together to talk about Black Bag, the music didn't quite resonate with you. I'm hoping that you appreciated the music in this a little more, because this is a very music forward film, I would say.
Yeah.
Music is a central character of this movie.
Yeah, I was digging the music the whole time, man. And it kind of created mood. Like you get the high clouds of the delta and the kind of the parallel of the high clouds and the endless cotton fields with the ripe cotton.
Oh yeah.
And the long, long roads. And then you get this delta music with the dobro guitar, which is a real echoey sound. Yeah, I just was digging it, man. I was digging all of it. And then they incorporated all this different like African drumming and even hip hop and stuff into it.
Right, because there's a scene where it's sort of like a celebration of blues from the past, present, and future. It's a beautiful scene. It's one of those scenes in a movie that you just like will never forget and really just, it feels holy, I want to say. It feels like it's touching on something very profound.
There's a couple scenes and there's a few scenes in movies that are that way. One is one of the first scenes in The Revenant where they have all natural lighting and they're walking up a creek.
Ooh.
And that's a Lubezki cinematography thing.
Yep.
And I like get chills when I see that. And when I saw it in the big screen, I just got chills. And then this scene, which is at the juke joint, that's like kind of magical realism kind of deal going on. It's the best scene I've seen in a movie probably for many years.
I agree. 100%.
Yeah. Like it's phenomenal. If you just saw that scene, it would make you go, oh yeah, I got to watch this movie. It's probably an A. Mm-hmm. Like that, because it's that good of a scene.
So good.
Yeah. Like kind of transports you.
Yeah, it does. It transports you. And that's what it is. It's like the best scenes in movies take visuals and music and all the elements and transport you to like a spiritual realm. I think that's why, like, the movie has this like conceit that, like you were mentioning, that like these blues players can tap into another dimension. But I think movies can do that occasionally as well when you have scenes like this where you really are in the spiritual realm, in God's realm. And I don't think that's overstating it.
Yeah.
So the music was composed by Ludwig Göransson, who did the music for Oppenheimer. We've talked about him before. He did Oppenheimer.
How different is this music?
Yeah, totally different.
Man.
But I will say with Oppenheimer, we've talked about that movie a lot, and I famously think it's tremendously overrated. But I will say the music in that is what's holding Oppenheimer together. If you didn't have the music, the dun 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 dun, you would be the most boring, awful snooze fest that imaginable. Like the music actually keeps you hoping for something more, even though that something more never comes.
Here's some really smart white guys in a room and some paper that they're looking at.
That's it. That's Oppenheimer.
Now they're going to talk about the paper.
Oh, gosh. More lawyers talking. Yeah. So, great. We love him with the music anyway, and he's so good in this. And I feel like, yeah, I just hope that he gets the recognition he deserves for this movie, because he's really put together a music-forward film that is wonderful. Wonderful. All right. Writing and directing, Ryan Coogler wrote and directed this movie. Now, he has co-written a movie before, Wakanda Forever. This is the first time he has solo written a film and directed it. He's only directed 5 movies, Tim. He's young in his career. We're seeing an auteur in the making 5 movies in.
And young.
Young.
He's like 38. Yeah.
Yes.
Dude, did he not write Fruitvale Station? He just directed it?
He directed it, yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Have you seen Fruitvale Station? That was his debut. Uh-huh. I've not seen it. You've seen it.
Uh-huh. It's really good.
Can you tell us, is it really good? I've heard nothing but good things about it.
I saw it when it first came out, and I can't summarize it, but I remember talking to people about it and having a very good, like, it was very, I remember thinking highly of it. I don't remember it.
That's okay.
That well, I just remember there's some bad stuff that happens, I think, on a train. So,
nice.
But it gets into issues of race, and yeah, anyway, it's really interesting.
Yeah, so that was his debut. And then he did Creed after that, which is a Rocky movie, but a good one. Like, we're like bringing back the franchise to actually good quality filmmaking. And then he did two Black Panthers, the first, of course, and then Wakanda Forever. And this is his fifth film. So great to see him at this point in his career. And this movie is going to, just like Michael B. Jordan, open up a whole new set of directing doors for him. Love it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I really like Coogler. I think he is able to tap into something that I don't see any other director doing. And you can see Michael B. Jordan wants to work with this guy. I mean, like, every project.
He's in every single one of his movies. Yeah. I know. He's also a film nerd, Ryan Coogler. So shout out to Dan for tossing me this link. But there on YouTube, you just type in Ryan Coogler film stock. He for like freaking 20 minutes talks about the various like 35 millimeter versus IMAX, whatever that ratio
70
is.
70 millimeter.
Yeah, and he's got a whiteboard and he's like, this is why you what you want for this and that. And the dude knows his movies.
He's a hardworking dude. I read some of his bio. He was like a wide receiver in college. He was, he has a background. He went to USC film school. So that's a hard program to get into. And then, yeah, I mean, just he's accomplished a lot in a small amount of time. And I'm just really impressed with the dude.
What I really like about what he did with this movie is I actually really like how long the setup is. I think it's important. I think it's bold because normally you do not take this long to really get to the main point of your movie. But like you need that. You need this long period of time where these characters are being chosen for the juke joint and you're getting to understand who they are, because what's going to eventually happen is a lot of these characters are going to turn into vampires and you need to know what they're like. I know. You need to know what they're like before. For that, right? You need to understand why it's a loss if they turn into a monster. And so I love the long setup. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and it goes from very quickly from being just like a almost like a heist movie or like a big score kind of movie.
Yeah.
It goes very quickly from that into supernatural, magical, realist, full-on awesome vampire movie.
Yeah. And the thing about a vampire movie is that you're really, I think whenever you're like, I'm going to make a vampire movie, I think you're starting from in the negative, because vampire movies are like an inherently B movie concept. Like, right? If you're talking about garlic and crosses and vampires, you're like, you've got to overcome the B movies. You're starting at B.
Yeah. So, but they like, it's so atmospheric, right? The beginning. I mean, it's like, I feel like I'm in the Delta.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this. We got such a different portrayal of the Black community in the Delta in this movie than I've ever seen in any movie.
Oh, interesting.
Because I feel like in a lot of the movies we see, it's like either folks are on a plantation or it's always highlighting the power differential, but never looking at the positive stuff of the folks who are the sharecroppers. So you like look and there's this little town, it's all Black folks in the little town, and there's like community and there's church and it's community and all these things are happening in spite of this white supremacy.
Love that.
And it doesn't highlight the white supremacists generally speaking in this movie. It highlights the folks who are trying to live into a new way of life in the midst of all the pressure of white supremacy that's all around them. So it's like really positive. Like you get good vibes out of the community. Like I'm like, oh, this is a cool, these are cool people. You get to know each character and it doesn't become, you get characters, not caricatures. You care about the characters and their complexity allows you to do so, I feel.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just like your typical, every Black character is suffering under the, like there is some of that, but like they're very strong, like independent characters, mm-hmm, in this community. It's, well, yeah, it's great. So Coogler, man. Yeah. Great. He's bringing it all together here. He's got the music, the cameras, he's got a nice ending to wrap it all up. He's nailing this film from beginning to end. It's impressive. It's an achievement and just a really great theater experience. As we mentioned, I love that he's bringing us all to the theater and like, hey, let's enjoy this movie on the biggest screen possible. Love it.
That's cool. Do you ever think that this movie might be a metaphor for being a black filmmaker in Hollywood?
Wow. Yikes. Well, let's get into themes. I want to get into some themes. Okay. So like, here's the thing. I asked Dan actually as we were leaving the theater, I was like, so what do you think the vampires represent? And we immediately realized that it could be a million different things, which is what you want out of art, right? If there was a very clear, like, this is the metaphor that we're going for here, it means this, then it's not great art. You want it to be open-ended enough where it can mean a whole bunch of different things. So I think that's interesting. That's one road to go down. Being a black filmmaker in a very white Hollywood. Interesting.
So, like, for this movie, this is why I ask all this. Like, the two brothers, right? The twins, who are obviously, the idea is like they look exactly the same, but they're not.
Yep.
So it's playing with identity a little bit. But these two guys have to figure a way out to make they can do it the best of anyone, this juke joint. They know they can do it the best. They got the best liquor. They got the best musicians. They got the best food. They know the community more than anyone else. But all the forces are trying to make it so this won't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so even Coogler himself had to do some heavy negotiating to get this film made. And then he negotiated it. It's like he had to hustle. He negotiated the full rights to the film after 25 years.
Really?
Yes. And he's already profit sharing from the box office, which is super rare. So he like basically, my take on it is like he did things that nobody's ever done. And he did it in a system that usually, you know, young black directors don't always have power in.
Yep.
And he basically like worked the system. But I wonder like how, and then the idea that something wants to steal your people, suck the blood out of like everything that you're trying to do, like destroy your thing you're doing constantly. And they're at your door all the time. I don't know. I was thinking, oh, interesting. Like from the businessy standpoint, from the smoke and stack standpoint, I was like, huh.
How cool if it was? How cool if like the metaphor as he's writing is like sticking it to Hollywood while also taking all their money? I just love it. That's great.
Yeah, I guess you write what you know, right?
You do.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't help but think maybe like he gets the business of film. I mean, he does because he negotiated this so well.
It's so cool. He got a share of the profits, man. He's going to be a rich man.
Yeah. And he gets the rights in 25 years. And I think he must, I mean, I think this film could endure.
Totally. This could be a cult hit where it's like, it just comes, you know, to your local, you know, art house theater once a year. I could totally see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many strands to pull on. I think you got the idea of forced assimilation, which we've already kind of touched on. But, you know, when it comes to music, especially how white people have sort of taken the blues, you know, taking music from black people and made it their own or taking credit for it. I think there's a rich history of that, unfortunately.
Yeah. So I think that's, of course,
of course.
I think the idea of like, how do you survival in the midst of, you're basically living under a regime that has all this power and can oppress you at their own whim. So I think that's all there. That's pretty relevant. One of the things that got me that was a little bit more subtle was that the vampires that came to go get them are Irish, right? Mm-hmm. Scotch Irish. So that's who immigrated to the South historically were Scotch Irish people. They weren't English. They were people who were fleeing, a lot of times were fleeing English oppression or fleeing landlords or fleeing something. They had been oppressed and they had been treated like an underclass. Then they came to the South and then they became the people that treated the others like an underclass.
Interesting.
Yeah. So this idea of evil is like the people that are turning them into, that are turning these folks into vampires, the black folks into vampires are the Irish. They became vampires, but the idea is that they were fleeing this and they were trying to start their own life and have their own control over things from an oppressor. And then they ended up being these vampires, like the oppressors, like people that just want to take identity and life from people.
There's something to that. Like, what's that Dark Knight quote? It's like you either become the hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain or something like that. I forget the exact quote, but there's this idea where you like really can be, you can be oppressed and you can naturally rise up against that oppression or survive it and then become the oppressor later on. And there's this like built-in like tendency and irony there. I think we're seeing that play out with Israel Gaza in Gaza, where like, you know, this is historically oppressed people, obviously the Holocaust mm-hmm. and everything, and now what they are doing to the Palestinians is frankly just genocidal. It's just awful every single day. Yeah. And it's, you know, some people say it's anti-Semitic to criticize Israel, but I say no, even people who have been historically oppressed can become the oppressor, and that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, I think that critique lacks a nuance. I think that's very simplistic. Not your critique, the critique that you're referring to.
Right.
Yeah, I think in recovery, like, because I would go to recovery a lot in my thinking, they have a simple quote, hurt people hurt people.
Yep.
And I think traumatize people and hurt themselves too. So I think when you have, and we can't go too far with this because I also think that we look at God as a God that transforms and does things that he can deliver us from those things. But I do think like when we've experienced abuse, trauma, and hurt, it's like we're way behind in trying. It puts us in a place where love takes almost more work to accomplish because we don't know how to, because we've experienced these things. But there are always, to me, there's always people that, you know, even in, which would mean like if somebody's been really hurt, they can't be capable of. No, not at all. I don't think that's the case. I think a lot of us have experienced deep hurt and are very capable of love, but this gets into like wounded healer ideas. And so this is where the Christian stuff kind of, like, as I'm thinking about this, like Henry Nouwen he's dead now, but he was a priest and a writer, and he writes a book called The Wounded Healer. And the idea is that out of our wounding, that's the very place that we can bring healing to others, which is kind of neat, but it's two-edged because it could be the same thing. Like the area of our pain and our hurt could be the same area that we lash out against others. Or right. That we hurt people, or that we use systemically to do the same thing to people that were done to us.
So it's possible to overcome it, but there is this natural tendency where it turn you into a herder of others, right? That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So like in our lives, like we may not ever fully recover from and I'm talking a very individual basis, but also I think it applies to groups of people too, because church people should be thinking corporate terms most of the time. We usually think individual. But like my take is like we can be incredibly hurt and maybe never recover from that and never even like get to the point of where our psyche has like can function how it quote should. But we still can be capable of great love. So it's like a both and rather than like get healed. Because I think we tend to go with the, I'm hitting a nerve. It took me a little while to talk it out. I think that maybe we won't be fully healed this side of the dirt. But I think that we can also at the same time, we can demonstrate great love in our relationships, even in the midst of that.
Yeah.
So it's like a both and kind of deal.
It's beautiful. I think of how I was bullied, you know, when I was a kid, like really badly in 7th and 8th grade every day. And that it will always be a part of me. And it did shape my life. It made me more cautious and insecure. And it's something that I will always have sort of a battle against inside of me of thinking that I'm not worthy of love, you know, whatever. I have to like fight against that. But I also could have taken the path of becoming a bully myself, which is what some people go down to overcome that too. So yeah, I get what you're saying.
And like looking at, that's the hurt part. And then looking at also that your hurt will be the place where you can minister to people. My guess is that you can probably connect to people who have gone through abuse and bullying.
Yeah.
Because you're able to like go, I know the place that you are at right now without saying that you know it. You just do. And that becomes a place for God to work in their life and for you to not only receive love, but also to give love, which I think is beautiful and wonderful that those things can exist.
I love that, man. That's great.
I don't know how we got there from this film, but
that's what art gives you. So many different ways to go. One thing that I also noticed is that Sammy's character is, we've talked about how he's at a crossroads. I think he's torn between kind of two different paths. And I think it's a path that we also can be torn on. So I was thinking of the parable of the sower, when I was watching this, because you have like the parable of the sower, you got like the different seeds. The word of God can go on like different paths or whatever. And one of them is you can be choked out by like the, by being too like the cares of this world. Yeah. Thorns. And then you have these other paths, right? So I was thinking about Sammy and how like, and what the temptation of the vampires are, because the vampires say, basically join us and you can live forever in this world. And yeah, you won't pass on to the next one, but you can basically be invincible, strong, and be forever in this sort of like Irish dance party. And so there's this sense, I think, so one of the best definitions of worldliness that I've ever heard is acting as if this world is all there is. And I think that is what the vampires sort of represent, is like you can get sucked down this path that leads you into just like, this is it. I'm like locked into just this world forever. And I think that is a path that leads you to bad things. There's also, though, another to pull on the other extreme where you can be Sammy's dad and you can be so locked into the church and locked into just your own little Christian bubble that you're not making any impact on the world out there. And so Sammy's kind of torn between these two extremes, and he chooses this path where it's kind of the both and, where you're like, you're not staying in your bubble, but you're also not being consumed by the world and acting as if this is all there is. And I think there, that's interesting, that pull that we can have in either direction.
I also like the idea that the vampires are not the same people that they're vampires, but they're different people than the people that they were
when they become a vampire.
Uh-huh. Okay. So they have a lot of similarities. They can share like a corporate memory with everyone who's a vampire, which is really creepy.
Yeah.
That could be a whole film. Yeah. But like the thing that really caught me is like, they're not who they were, and they're not really who they were supposed to be in some kind of way. It's like, no, this isn't how it's supposed to be. We weren't supposed to be like this. But it's very alluring because you're like, well, look at the benefit. I mean, I felt in the film, and I was telling Perry this, I was like, man, the vampire option seemed okay.
Right. It seems like
maybe
you'd consider it anyway. Yeah.
Well, the life of the vampire says that we basically, they're waiting to kill their own people, right? The vampires, they're folks they're related to. They're like waiting outside so that when they come out, they'll murder them all and then make them into vampires, and they'll be vampires. So they'll be together, but it's this high price where they have to be vampires. So it's like giving up identity. And, you know, I could see like, and your loved ones are asking you, who are vampires, are asking you to be one.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, I felt real conflict in that. Like maybe, I know that they decided to not do that, but there's a little bit of me that's like, oh, and then the idea of false hope too, like, oh, they're probably okay.
Mm.
No, they're not okay.
No,
they're dead.
Right. Yeah, right? Like, what if your loved one was there? It was like, hey, come be a vampire and live with me forever. Or the other option is to kill that person so they're not a vampire. That's a difficult choice. It's not a very cut and dry. It's a hard dilemma. Yeah.
But anyway, I thought that. But at the end, spoiler alert, what was interesting to me, it wasn't like he wasn't. I think they talk about, well, this is the greatest, the blues man who's Sammy. It's in the 90s and he's like in his 90s or something. And the vampires come and see him. But at the end, he says, that was the greatest day of my life up until the vampires. And it was because there was some level of like freedom. They were all working together. They got to be together. And they had this little tiny time where they thought, we might be successful as a community, as a group of people who are doing the music and getting people all together and making money and like throwing this huge party. And that was like, this is like the best day of my life. All of them think that, even the vampire. It's freedom.
Freedom. Yeah.
There's this like little taste of freedom. And it was, they all look backward to it at that point as being the best thing that has ever happened. And it's like right on the edge of the evil.
And what an appropriate metaphor for the black experience, where it's like, you know, hey, you were a slave, you're free. You're free. Oops. White people are still there at your doorstep to oppress you again, you know? And it's just this constant push-pull for the black experience, right? It's like, oh, no more Jim Crow, but we're going to embed it still
in
all the laws. Yeah.
little moments where you're like, I was truly free at this little moment, and I have to look back on that moment to kind of keep going. I've got to look back at that moment with fondly, and I've got to even idealize that moment of small amount of freedom that we had in those moments.
To cope with the pain that came after, right? Exactly.
Well, it's like just to keep going, even if you're a vampire.
Even if you're a vampire.
So whether you live forever or die, if you become a horrible beast or not, you look toward that little bit of freedom as being like the best life that you ever had. So I think this movie has a lot to do with freedom.
Yep, freedom. And then at the very end, continued spoiler alert, we've got Smokestack. Now I can't remember. It would have been Smoke. He kills all of those like Klansmen that want to come back to their property and kill them. He just like blows them all away. What do you think Coogler was going with? Why include that at the end? Because it did feel like an interesting add-on. Maybe it just goes back to what we were saying about becoming the oppressor. I don't know.
Yeah. Because they were basically like the vampires, right? The Klansmen.
Yeah, sure.
They're like laying in wait for these folks. They were going to go murder them all, take their money, because they knew they had all that money. They're going to murder them, take their money, and then take their property back. So even if there weren't any vampires, that would have happened.
Right. So they were like the alternate vampires coming for you.
They're right? Like vampires too. Yeah, so it's like even if you didn't have these vampire situation, you would have these creeps that would have showed up in force.
Mm-hmm. Which, of course, we do not endorse violence, and I think it just shows that like Smoke is becoming, you know, the very thing that he's fighting against. He's killing all these people, and you can call it justified if you want, but I don't.
I think there is like, I don't think it's true catharsis, but I think to see a black hero kill a bunch of Klansmen, like in an action sequence, there's something about that that feels good.
It feels good. You know what I mean? Of course it does. Yeah.
And especially when they were laying in wait for the innocent folks, you know, that had paid in cash and like were all above board and like didn't do anything wrong. And they're like coming back to murder them all. There's something about getting the jump on them because you're more clever that I'm like, oh.
We love it. This is classic Hollywood. We want to see Indiana Jones punch Nazis, and we want to see black people take out Klansmen. We want to see this.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Nazi punching. Yeah. So I'm conflicted because I'm like, this is super violent. But at the same time, I'm like, yes.
I know. Yes. Love your enemies, but, you know, kill some Klansmen. No. Kidding. It feels right, but we know it's not.
It's like in the imprecation, Psalms of Imprecation tradition, I think.
And it's a fantasy.
Break the arm of my enemy, kill the people that oppress me, that kind of thing. Which I think is, if you look at the black experience there, I would say that the black experience has much more access to those scriptures than, say, my experience.
Of course.
You're like, oh, so it's like, yeah, of course, break the arm of the oppressor. Then they can't oppress anymore.
I know. And then it gets really radical when you talk about Jesus saying, love your enemies, because it's like, for what? Well, white people, it's like, love that person who gave you too long of an email.
Be nice. Right. It's be nice. No, sorry. No, it's not that. It's not. Like, yeah. And then what does that mean? But we can't go into all that.
No, we can't. We got to wrap it up, actually. So, Tim, what are your final thoughts on this movie and your letter grade?
My final thoughts are, what a sleeper this was. It is a powerful, eerie, creepy movie that's like the original Wicker Man in some ways. Has a little bit of Get Out flavor. It's so eerie. Great character development. Incredible music. Lighting. Oh, top tier. The acting, top tier. Everything about it. Best film I've seen this year so far.
So far. We've only seen two. But it's amazing how this movie came out in May. And I think it will be on my top 10 at the end of the year for sure. I think it's going to make some splash at the Oscars. And that is incredible for a movie that came out in May. Love it.
Yep, it's true.
What's your letter grade?
A. Straight up.
Straight up A. All right. Well, good. I mean, it's crazy. Like I said, that this movie is so good. It was a sleeper is a good word for it. Blew me away too. Loved the theater experience. Go see this on the biggest screen possible. Yeah, I think... Man, I was debating A or A minus, but I think I'm with you, Tim. Like, what? How can you find fault in this film? I think I'm going to go with an A too. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
There you go. There you have it. Movie is Sinners. It's playing in a theater near you. This is definitely a theater movie. We like to say, whether this is a theater movie or not, Black Bag not a theater movie. Rent it. Wait till streaming. This.
Watch it on the BBC.
Watch it on the BBC. This one, find a theater. Go see this in the theater. If you've got an IMAX near you, see it there. I'm so sad that Milwaukee doesn't have a true IMAX near us. I had one in Grand Rapids. It was so fun to see an actual IMAX presentation. This was shot on IMAX cameras. This is built for IMAX. Go see it if you can. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Tim. Well, next month, we know what we're watching. Tim, you're going to growl again? We're watching Mission Impossible, perhaps, at the awesome theater that we've talked about. And then we're gonna podcast on it when I am at your house in June. I'm so excited to come see you, Tim. We're going to get the Hawaiian food and we'll maybe go to that one place that has the great crab cake appetizer. I'm like salivating, thinking of all the great food by you.
We'll go to some different places this
okay.
time.
Okay. I know. I want to always go to like the same old places because it was so good, but you want to take me to some... There's stuff I haven't eaten in Kansas City, Missouri yet.
It's true. We're working our way year after year through different barbecue.
Yes. I haven't done the gas station one. You said there was one that's like...
Oklahoma Joe's.
Yeah, we should do that.
I'll work on that.
All right.
Yeah, this should be fun.
Great. Mission Impossible is next, y'all. So yeah, go see it. Like I said... Go watch all the Mission Impossibles. If you haven't watched them in a long time, skip number 2. Do not watch it, but go right through it. You will be amazed at the quality. You will scold Tim for being reticent to see this film because you'll understand how wonderful they are. And then we'll all join together and talk about Ethan Hunt. It really feels like a final... I don't know whether like they're going to pull a Tom Cruise dies in this thing like they did with James Bond. I don't know. But it feels like the trailer feels like this is the end of Ethan's journey. I can't believe that Tom Cruise would give it up, but he is in his 60s. And maybe those stunts are wearing on his body. I don't know. Anyway,
maybe we'll talk he's about a vampire.
Maybe he's a vampire. That would not surprise me at all. Him and Paul Rudd. It's like, how do you still look like that? I don't understand.
They're vampiric. Yes.
Yeah.
They got vampire good looks.
So that's next on the docket. Tim, it was great talking movies with you as usual. Keep the faith, my friends. We will see you next time.